Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, kind of, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today to close out the work week. And, Jim, we start with the good. We're kind of torturing this into a good martini because it's obviously not good news, but the fact that it's coming to light is good news. While the media likes to use all of its oxygen to talk about developments involving the Russia investigation, and this week, of course, Paul Manafort was the focal point, there are other scandals out there. There's more nefarious details related to the IT guy that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was protecting. But today we're going to talk about Samantha Power, who, of course, was the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations in the second 4 years of the Obama administration, and she is now front and center in the unmasking controversy. This is Fox News. Samantha Power, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, was unmasking at such a rapid pace in the final months of the Obama administration that she averaged more than one request for every working day in 2016 and even sought information in the days leading up to President Trump's inauguration. Two sources, who were not authorized to speak on the record, said the request to identify Americans whose names appeared in foreign intelligence reporting, known as unmasking, exceeded 260 last year. One source indicated this occurred in the final days of the Obama White House. Three of the nation's intelligence agencies received subpoenas in May explicitly naming three top Obama administration officials, former National Security Advisor Susan Rice, John Brennan, who, of course, was director of the CIA, and Samantha Power. Records were also requested for Ben Rhodes, then President Obama's advisor, but the documents were not the subject of a subpoena. I asked for comment earlier this week. A spokesman for Power had nothing further to add, but on Thursday, the spokesman provided this statement to Fox News, quote, "The anonymously sourced reports about Ambassador Power's intelligence requests are false. Ambassador Power looks forward to engaging the bipartisan committee in the appropriate classified forum." So, Jim, false could mean no, it was 258, or false could mean no, you're completely off base here. You got to be able to parse these, and we'll see if the members of the committee can do that. But this is an issue that needs a lot more attention, and good reporting here from Catherine Herridge and others to get this out in the forefront.
Yeah, what's worth noting here is that if we had found anybody who you'd expect to be looking at intelligence intercepts doing this, I think public interest would be less than it is now. You know, I don't think, Samantha Power was on the National Security Committee, so she had a good reason. Not really. I mean, like, you'd figure most of her day job would be involved dealing with the United Nations. Why would she be reviewing all of these communications in depth? And why would she be looking at so many involving the Trump administration? Was the UN just, you know, having a slow day that day? You know, you couldn't even put it on that because she was doing it sounds like, just about every day. What was she looking for? What was she so interested in about these communications between Americans and foreign people who are under surveillance? Why was she constantly asking, "I need to know who the identify these American individuals are"? I notice in the denial there, quote, "Any insinuation that Ambassador Power was involved in leaking classified information is absolutely false." Okay, but what if she gave it to somebody else who leaked it? Right. I mean, one of the interesting theories that I heard from another conservative blogger last night who follows these sorts of issues more closely than I do made the point, like, look, if you're the Obama administration and you want to find dirt on the Republicans, dirt on the Republican nominee, if you want to find stuff that they would want to keep secret, if you want to expose things that are embarrassing to them, well, maybe you have Samantha Power be the one who's doing it. You don't have Susan Rice doing it. Susan Rice already has a rather infamous reputation in Washington. Maybe you don't have Ben Rhodes or anybody else who's already got a rep. Samantha Power, you've been kind of avoiding controversy. You do it. And once Samantha Power has it, she has the ability, she can distribute it to anybody she needs to, and they can leak it or do whatever they want with that information. It would be certainly one way which explain things, because that makes a heck of a lot more sense than just the UN ambassador just suddenly got really, really interested in intelligence intercepts and knowing which Americans were speaking to foreigners. So again, there's no good reason for the UN ambassador to have all this information, and her persistent interest should raise a whole heck of a lot of red flags around here.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So hopefully we can get to the bottom of that, whether it's through the committee, through our intelligence and Justice Department now. We'll find out. But let's move on to our bad martini, Jim. And we're talking about North Korea here. So it just strikes me that I think we've seen more from Nikki Haley in 6 or 8 months or whatever it is now than we saw from Samantha Power in 4 years on threats. Samantha Power talked about Syria once in a while, but Nikki Haley has certainly gotten more results. But anyway, North Korea threatened early Friday to detonate a hydrogen bomb over the Pacific Ocean in what the nation called the highest level of hardline countermeasure in history. The threat followed news that President Trump's administration would impose further sanctions on Pyongyang for its missile and nuclear weapons program. The warning was delivered by North Korean Foreign Minister Ri Yong-ho in New York, according to comments published by South Korea's Yonhap News Agency. Ri did not elaborate on when the detonation might take place and added that any decision on the matter would be taken by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. North Korea has never tested a nuclear device beyond its own borders. Were to do so in the Pacific Ocean, it would represent a dramatic and worrying new stage in its showdown with Washington over its attempts to become a nuclear-armed state. That's from USA Today. The Wall Street Journal version of the story includes this fun warning. Quote, if such a test occurred without warning, planes could fall from the sky as their electronics fail. Even satellites in low Earth orbit could be affected. The environmental effects on the ocean and its fishing resources would also be serious, according to Morris Jones, a space analyst writing for Australia's Lowry Institute for International Policy. So, Jim, we don't want to see the Pacific Ocean get EMP'd here and cause lost lives. We know the North Koreans are erratic. They usually don't announce anything ahead of time. And hopefully it's just more bluster, kind of like the missile to be fired towards Guam and so forth. But does this mean that Trump's rattling their cage, that they're trying to match his rhetoric? What do you take away from this?
Well, before everyone starts building their bomb shelters, I would note that there are times North Korea makes threats and does not follow through on them. You know, listeners of our podcast may remember it wasn't that long ago. The North Koreans were saying they were going to fire rockets at Guam. That, at least so far, has not happened. And they basically, sometimes they say things and don't actually do them. This is maybe a way of, frightening us, of intimidating us, attempting to get us to cower and make concessions, and they don't actually follow through. Because I think you would like to think the North Koreans would recognize this would actually, at this point, the United States would have to have a really serious retaliation, and I don't think sanctions would do it. You'd think that would be the sort of thing that would get China. If you irradiate a good chunk of the Pacific Ocean not too far from them, they might have a concern with that. On the one hand, I don't think they'll do this. If they do this, I do think that would be, if not war on the Korean Peninsula, very close to it. We can't have them irradiating large chunks of the Pacific Ocean and knocking planes out of the sky and doing stuff like that. Nobody has done an above ground nuclear test in many years. And I went back and I checked, I believe it, an atmospheric nuclear test has not occurred since 1980. And the argument from the United States and its allies, South Korea and Japan, is like, look, this is not the same as China's nuclear program. This isn't even the same as Pakistan's nuclear program. The North Koreans just don't behave the way other regimes do. Their ability to assess risk appears to be broken. Their ability, their willingness to handle nuclear power and nuclear weapons responsibly is just simply not proven at this point. And the likelihood of them doing something really dangerous with nuclear weapons and costing a lot of lives is simply too high for the world to continue like this. And we would have to then take the ugly action to, as I said, pursue some sort of policy of armed denuclearization of them. That's a horrible scenario, and a lot of people would probably die. But once they start setting off nukes above ground beyond their territory, it only took down two jetliners this time. I mean, do you wait for the next one? They seem to be in this endless cycle of greater escalation. And so we will see how it shakes out. North Korea really is getting to the point. They really want to figure out exactly where that line is, that if they cross, it's all-out war. They just want to get closer and closer to it, which is, about as unnerving a threat as you can imagine on the world stage right now.
Yeah. Let's hope China makes good on what the president announced yesterday, that their central bank is telling all the banks not to do any more business with North Korea. It's fairly easy for China to cheat on that, I would guess, because they have a lot of different back channels and secret ways of helping North Korea. But if they are finally serious about that, that could finally be a message that Kim Jong-un even understands. So let's hope they're honest about that. Jim, on to our crazy martini now. And we haven't really talked very much about Valerie Plame lately, and that's always a good thing. There's not much good to say about Valerie Plame, and there's far less today. Valerie Plame is married to Joe Wilson. Folks who are old enough will remember back around the time of the start of the Iraq War, early 2003, at a State of the Union speech, President George W. Bush uttered the famous 16 words about British intelligence showing that Saddam Hussein was getting yellow cake uranium from Niger in Africa. Well, Joe Wilson, who is a former ambassador to somewhere, said that that's not true. And as a result, he says that people within the Bush administration exposed the name of his covert operative wife, Valerie Plame, in a column by the late, great Bob Novak. Well, a huge investigation led by Patrick Fitzgerald, who was a special prosecutor, eventually led to charges against Scooter Libby, who was the chief of staff for Vice President Cheney at the time. He ended up being convicted on, I believe, perjury and making false statements, got his sentence commuted, even though it was Richard Armitage who over at the State Department who leaked the name to Bob Novak. So that's the background on Valerie Plame. She'd been quiet for a while, thankfully, but not yesterday. She tweeted out a story, and not just retweeted the story. She put the title in her own tweet that said, "America's Jews are driving America's wars." The subhead of this thing says, "Shouldn't they recuse themselves when dealing with the Middle East?" Obviously, there was a massive backlash pointing out how anti-Semitic this is, and perhaps she is, probably she is, as a result of agreeing with it. And then she goes into her Twitter defense. First of all, calm down. Retweets don't imply endorsement. Yes, very provocative, but thoughtful. Many neocon hawks are Jewish. And let's take a quick look at a couple of the statements in this article, Jim. Nobody has mentioned Israel in this conference, and we all know it's American Jews with all their money and power who are supporting every war in the Middle East for Netanyahu. Another one. Any organization that aspires to be heard on foreign policy knows that to touch the live wire of Israel and American Jews guarantees a quick trip to obscurity. Later on, it's safe to say that much of the agitation to do something about Iran comes from Israel and from American Jews. One might also add that neocons as a group were founded by Jews and are largely Jewish, hence their universal attachment to the state of Israel. Then the solution in this anti-Semitic article is that no Jew should ever be appointed to deal with anything related to the Middle East. And of the coup de grace, for those American Jews who lack any shred of integrity, the media should be required to label them at the bottom of the television screen when they appear. So then Valerie Plame says, okay, calm down. Many neocon hawks are Jewish, though. Then she claims to be of Jewish descent. Then she says, too many are so ready to go to war. Haven't we had enough for a while? Read the entire article and try, just for a moment, to put aside your biases and clearly think. And she got way more backlash because the entire article is anti-Semitic. And it says, she then says, I missed gross undercurrents to this article and didn't do my homework on the platform this piece came from. Now that I see it, it's obvious. Apologies, all. There is so much there that's problematic, and I should have recognized it sooner. Thank you for pushing me to look again. I'm not perfect and make mistakes. This was a doozy. All I can do is admit them, try to be better, and read more thoroughly next time. And finally, okay, folks, look, I messed up. I skimmed the piece, zeroed in on the neocon criticism, and shared it without seeing and considering the rest. Jim, you just made it worse, but for the Valerie Plame fan club that's out there in the media and is still pretty much chirping crickets in this story because there's been so little coverage of this, the shine is off Valerie Plame forever, I would think.
You'd like to think so, but what's more, I look, never mind looking forward, I kind of want to look back, and I want to say, wait a second, you know, either anti-Semitism is way more common than I thought, which is a disturbing possibility. But like, she, this is not the first time she's made comments like this, and this is not the first time she had tweeted approvingly articles from this particular creepy web publication. If you go back through her Twitter feed, you find all kinds of stuff where she had repeated an urban legend about dancing Israelis sighted after 9/11, and an article saying Israeli fingerprints are all over the place in the investigation of 9/11. She shared an article about why I still dislike Israel that, quote, laments the, quote, Israel lobby electing and controlling a malleable Congress, not capitalized, and increasingly even officials at state and local level. So it's the Jews control the government, you know, the usual stuff. And the thing that I had noted, like in light of all, like she's really focused on who's Jewish and who's not. She was very upset that, Natalie Portman is playing young Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and she says it's fine because, quote, because they're both Jewish. Now, by itself, it's not that bad, but Greg, I don't know about you. When I find somebody who's really obsessed with figuring out who's Jewish and who's not, there are two options. Either they're a matchmaker or they're virulently anti-Semitic. Like, that's, those are the two people who really want to know, oh, what kind of a name is that? Oh, any lineage and all that kind of stuff? Stuff like that. So if she has always had these views, all of a sudden, a lot of things kind of fall into place. We had kept pointing out, like, look, you know, the source, Novak eventually revealed his source. It was Richard Armitage. Richard Armitage was seen as one of the good guys in the Bush administration by most of the mainstream media. He was a Colin Powell guy. And for some reason, the accusation focused on Scooter Libby. It focused on Cheney and a lot of stuff on Wolfowitz and the neocon cabal and all that kind of stuff. Well, now all of a sudden, if you've always had this suspicion that Jews run the world and Jews secretly control the government, well, all of a sudden her viewpoint makes a heck of a lot more sense. And among the very few people who've ever, you know, paid any attention to Fair Game, the movie version of her autobiography, which is, you know, so fictionalized, the Washington Post editorial board had to say, you know, this really isn't how any of this happened. But it's kind of your almost like a generic, you know, Washington thriller movie. Except it's got a shadowy conspiracy of powerful people secretly controlling the government. You know, all of a sudden it stops looking like, you know, a John Grisham thing or something like that and starts seeing a little bit more like the protocols of the Elders of Zion. All of a sudden it turns into, you know, plugging into all of these other, you know, anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. So somebody who's never really liked Valerie Plame and never liked the celebration of her, the salutes to her, this tributes and people portraying her as this noble truth speaker and hero and all that. Well, first of all, the fact that she didn't see anti-Semitism in this article entitled America's Jews Are Starting America's Wars. Greg, she worked in intelligence. I mean, should we be glad she was an operative and not an analyst? Because I'm going to go ahead and say analysis is not her skill here. She, you know, this isn't even subtext. This is text, right? This is, we should identify Jews when they are on television. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, oh, would you like a gold star sewn onto their clothes? Or would a tattoo suffice? So on the one hand, it really gets my dander up about this. But the other thing also, like, wait, so she's always been like this, and just nobody really looked that hard at her. Nobody really bothered to probe her views or anything like that. There was this very convenient prepackaged narrative of, you know, Valerie Plame truth teller and the big bad Bush administration that came after her. And nobody wanted to look hard enough and say, oh, you know, actually, she might be kind of crazy. And in fact, you know, the most disturbing part of the entire story of Valerie Plame now is that the CIA relied on her for all those years.
Yeah, there were some.
I feel safer.
Yeah, exactly. There were some on the left on Twitter who made mention of it. I didn't see it anywhere broadcast. I think Jake Tapper was off yesterday. If he had been there, I'm sure he would have mentioned it. But pretty quiet considering the stark comments here and her supposed celebrity.
I think
celebrity.
They did a segment on it this morning. Like, they're not totally ignoring it, but I kind of wish people would say, hey, remember, you know, how we like, does the studio feel any different about making a movie of her life? I think it was Naomi Watts played her and Sean Penn played Joe Wilson. This is a woman who really got saluted and celebrated. I mean, it's probably not as bad as Cate Blanchett playing Mary Mapes, but we're getting close.
Well, let's try and cleanse our palate to head out for the weekend here. I'm sure the Bears and Jets will lose again this weekend. What are you looking forward to?
There's no way you're getting that number one pick from us. We know we're going to lose this week, Greg. And don't think you can do how the Bears can succeed in having a worse record than us. Because you know who we're taking on this week? Jay Cutler. And you guys know how good Jay Cutler. Oh, wait a second.
Yeah, we might be a game ahead of you for the top draft pick after this weekend. But
you know. I don't know about you. Are you finding you enjoying college football more? All of a sudden, I'm paying a lot more attention to USC and Sam Darnold.
I haven't figured out who I want as the draft pick yet because we already have way too many quarterbacks. But, you know, just getting away from all the politics of the NFL, there's less of it, at least on the field in college. And that seems to be a little bit comforting. Although once these kids actually go to class, then, of course, it's a whole different ballgame. But yes, I like watching college a lot more than the pros. And that's been true for the last few years, actually.
I was going to say, look, the NFL is just not as exciting as it used to be. And it won't be exciting again until, you know, Social Justice Warrior Month. Which is a callback to yesterday's podcast, if you haven't listened to it.
Yes. Make sure you catch up if you haven't heard that one. Jim, even though we probably know what's going to happen this weekend, enjoy it anyway, and I'll talk to you on Monday.
See you Monday.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great weekend, everyone.